The markets. We just can't get enough of them.
Markets are the drivers of your wealth and investment strategy.
Welcome to Magic Markets with your co-hosts, the Finance Coast and Mohammed Nalla.
Together, we have more than 25 years of combined experience in the markets.
For those looking to take their market and business knowledge to the next level, we offer Magic Markets Premium. Our recent shows have included turnaround candidates like Nike, Walgreens, and Burberry, as well as a portfolio staple like JP Morgan. We also ventured off the beaten track into groups like 3M and ASML that may not always be on your radar. Visit magic-markets.com today and go premium to get these insights. Welcome to episode 218 of Magic Markets. It's been a pretty busy time. We've now said goodbye to quarter one. We are actually recording this on April Fool's Day. Mo, are we committing that there will not be any April Fool's jokes? I think the market generally gives us enough chaos that we don't need to make any April Fool's jokes. Did you see any particularly good ones running around on social media that you quite enjoyed, or were you immune to that?
Immune. I ignore all of this nonsense, right? There's so much fake news, and then even the real news looks like it's an April Fool's joke. So there's no real upside, you know, kind of looking out there. In fact, April 1 is the one day when I try and actively avoid as much of the social media news flow as we get. I'm committing. No fools on our show this week. Ghost, I don't know if you're ready to commit to that.
Jeez, I mean, I don't know if we can commit to no fools, but we can commit to no April fools. No fools is an opinion that our listeners will have to form for themselves. But I will tell you that the April Fool's joke I enjoyed was Sea Harvest, who promised to sell bottled seawater. So that was quite fun. And there were a couple of other niche, hobby-related ones and whatever, which are too niche to really share here. But always some good stuff on April Fool's. It's fun to see how social media just, you know, lights up. And brands do some clever stuff. They really do come up with some smart stuff that goes viral. Some excellent free brand recognition if you come up with a good April Fool's joke. But we're not as smart as that, so we'll have to just talk about US consumers instead, right?
Indeed. And I mean, the US gives us enough headlines to actually just wonder, is this an April Fool's joke or not? I mean, just looking at some of the moves, what's been driving markets? I mean, markets have really been hard hit by this Trump tariff war. We've spoken a bit about that. We've spoken about US jobs and how US jobs data actually comes through. But all of these factors are very important. When you're weaving through that macro narrative, you've got to bring that down also in terms of what does it mean for the underlying economy? And then remember, that actually has a direct bearing in terms of companies' own expectations around earnings guidance. It then filters through with a bit of a lag in terms of earnings themselves coming through. And then that is reflected, both the sentiment, the expectation, as well as the actual delivery gets reflected in the share prices. And that's why we're talking about that this week. In fact, this week, the focus we're going to go and look at, as you mentioned, the US consumer. Now, why is this an interesting place to start, Ghost, is that the US consumer single-handedly was the one driving force behind a lot of the US exceptionalism that we saw on equity markets into the tail end of last year. And that's actually eased off quite a bit now. And what's driving that? I think you had mentioned this as an idea when we were discussing off air. If you're looking at consumer sentiment in the US, a number of sentiment gauges, but probably one of the most watched sentiment gauges is the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index. Now, that actually decreased down to 57 index points in March. For context, that was around 64.7 in February. So quite a significant deterioration. And what's driving some of that? We've got to look at it, right? What's driving some of that is that we've got the tariff concerns. We've discussed that. People are unsure around what does this actually mean for US consumers. Just the tail end of last week, Trump announced 25% tariffs to come through on US autos. And someone quantified that and said it's going to translate into around $15,000 extra per motor vehicle sold in the US. So that's quite a big hit. And people are saying, what's going to happen to my overall disposable income? The costs of goods are going to go up. Now, that actually filters directly into inflation expectations. If you look at that as another sentiment indicator, and that also underlies the consumer confidence index, consumer inflation expectations have actually ticked up to above 4%. That's the highest in 32 years. And it suggests a high degree of uncertainty, apprehension around how sustained some of the upside price risks are in the US economy. And then lastly, it's one I actually referenced on the webinar I did with Mesh a little while ago talking about gold. That's the Economic Policy Uncertainty Index. If you look at that, we're now at levels higher than we had actually seen in the global financial crisis. And that doesn't bode well for markets. It doesn't bode well for the overall economy. That headline consumer confidence index now at its lowest point since January 2021. So again, quite depressed if you're looking at US consumers. Historically, there's quite a bit of polarization underlying that confidence index. People's political views seem to inform it. So you'd get people who, for example, lean Democrat. They'd be very negative during a Trump administration. Likewise, Republicans would be very negative during a Democrat administration. What's interesting right now, Ghost, is you're seeing, despite the partisan alignment, Democrat or Republican, consumers across both political parties, both political spectrum, those consumers are all starting to get a lot more bearish. And so it's something we should probably pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah, the story is not much better here, I've got to tell you. I mean, there's lots of headlines. If you go and search South African consumer confidence, you'll see those wonderful words, record lows. Yay. So this is the FNB, BER, I think that's the Bureau of Economic Research, Consumer Confidence Index. Not good is the summary, citing things like tax fears, among other things. So, you know, this is what happens. The budget speech comes out and everyone says, oh no, things are still not good. There's a big worry. Yes, load shedding might largely be a thing of the past, apart from an occasional cameo appearance. But now we have other stuff to worry about. And now there's all this uncertainty. I saw headlines literally today about how the DA is not going to support this budget. And we still don't really know exactly how that's actually going to play out. So it's just a really difficult time for consumers. And the stocks on the JSE that are very consumer focused, we don't have a retail index or a consumer index that people really look at. It's one of the things that I wish was different on the JSE. We have to go look at the industrials index, basically, which is just the polony of absolutely everything that no one knew where else it could go. And if we did have one, it would be horribly, horribly down. I think it was last week on the show, we actually joked about how Choppies has basically been the retailer you actually wanted to own this year. We're not going to rehash that conversation. We're just pointing out that the consumer side has been rough in South Africa and on the US market. And there's big US names that are releasing some pretty tough stuff, right? And it's across the board. If you look at what analysts are asking in those earnings transcripts, they are focusing very much on consumer health. Very, very much so. And so, Mo, we see this consumer pressure coming through because that's what analysts are asking about in the transcripts. And you can actually tell a lot from the mood. And we can get to that because I went and did a little bit of an exercise of looking at some of these transcripts and seeing which words come up most often, which is quite fun for gauging the mood, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and I call it like social media sentiment. You see what's coming up. It's the same thing when you trawl through those analyst transcripts. And in fact, if you go and have a look at, I think, FactSet, they do some interesting things where they'll pick a word like recession or inflation and say, how often are these words actually popping up in earnings calls across various sectors in the US economy, in the US market? I think the point you raise is very important, though, Ghost, is that the South African market doesn't have the kind of breadth of coverage that you get in the US. You don't really carve out a lot of your underlying sectors. And that's why looking at international markets, specifically the US, is very interesting for me, even from a macro perspective, but then also from a bottoms-up perspective as well. That's why we do what we do in Magic Markets Premium, looking at global stocks. You just get a lot more granular in terms of some of the exposures you can get. So I'm going to jump into that because it is very different when you drill down. Because yes, headline consumer sentiment is very poor. You've actually seen that come through in a lot of the discretionary spending categories. So for example, Deckers Outdoor, they've seen significant price declines, shrinking profit margin, weak guidance. Now, Nike, that's one I know is close to your heart. You know, really a disappointing look coming through from Nike as well. But if you go and have a look at sectors that have been more resilient, then you're getting the consumer non-discretionary stuff that starts to come through. Stuff like CVS Health, which was sold off very aggressively, yes, or low base effects coming through there. They've actually started to bottom out a little bit, and you've seen some activity come through based on which sector you're looking at. The other differentiator you want to look at is exposure to, you know, whether you're looking at high-income consumers or middle-income consumers. Something you pointed out to me is how resilient a stock like Ferrari can actually be here, because they are not just mass affluent, they are very much a luxury play. And their response to the Trump tariff wars was that, well, we'll just increase our prices by 15 or 25, whatever the tariff increases, our price will go up by that amount. And that's because they know that their consumers, certainly in the US, are price insensitive. Most people in the US that are buying Ferraris already own a Ferrari. And so you see some resilience coming through based on how far up that LSM or income curve you are. Now, the other thing I want to mention here, and we can go into some fun numbers, because I like doing this, right, is if you go and break that down and say which stocks have actually performed over the course of, and we can pick a time period. You can go year to date, you can go 12 months, you can even go 5 years, right? Which stocks have actually come through very strongly? And even when you look at that, I won't get into that yet. We'll save some of that for the later discussion. If you go and have a look at that, you can see a pretty clear distinction in terms of where companies play in the income spectrum, and then also where they play in terms of what consumers have to buy versus some of the more discretionary stuff goes.
Absolutely. So a really good example, I mean, I'll jump into one if that's all right, is Nike. Nike recently released some numbers and they think they are very premium. The market says, maybe not so much. We're happy to buy your stuff, but at quite a discount. So I went and looked at the Nike earnings transcript. Pretty interesting. So the word China appears 17 times, which is a lot, but you'd expect that because Nike's Chinese business is substantial. And the Chinese business was down 15% year on year in the quarter at Nike, which was really rough. So obviously analysts put a lot of attention on that. The word tariff appears only twice. Now, that's all the proof you could ever need, really, that earnings are backward-looking. So when these earnings come out and companies come and talk about them, they're talking about what already happened, whereas the market is very forward-looking. And I think the questions that analysts ask at these earnings releases, it's a bit of a hybrid of the two, really. So at Nike, it's all about China. That's the focus. Then if we move on from Nike, we can look at a company like Lululemon. And there, Mo, the word China appeared 11 times. So not as much as Nike, but interestingly enough, very different story at Lululemon because mainland China sales up 39%. It's actually the US that is slowing Lululemon down, sales up just 1%. And so there, the word tariff appears 6 times, not twice. So you've got a scenario where a company like Nike, which has disappointed the market, is struggling in China. Lululemon doing well in China, but their risks lie in tariffs, reciprocal tariffs, whatever the story may be. Same story at Nike. They also face these tariff risks. They just have so many other own goals that they need to sort out in the meantime that the tariffs are not the biggest problem, which also teaches you something about how these stocks operate and how dangerous turnaround stories are in this broader macroeconomic environment. Because Lululemon has done, you know, nothing wrong in inverted commas. And so the focus there is on the macro. Nike has done a lot of things wrong that have led to this turnaround. And so the focus is on the issues in a place like China, as opposed to something like the tariffs. If you'll allow me one more, I did Darden Restaurants as well. Now they own restaurants in the US. Olive Garden is their main asset, which I think is an Italian themed restaurant effectively. The word China comes up precisely 0 times because they're not in China. They don't even sell Chinese food. So no big surprise there. The word tariff comes up 6 times, even though they source 80% of their inputs locally. So that was the answer that management gave, was to say, look, you know, actually 80% of our sourcing is local anyway. And the stuff we import, 20% of our total procurement, we can look for alternatives locally if we need to. But what about the knock-on effect on this US consumer that we've been talking about? Because that is really the focus for tariffs. The word consumer came up in the Darden Restaurants transcript 25 times. Now, you would expect this because it's a consumer-facing business, but if you go and look at the context in which it was raised, it's not positive. It's analysts hammering them with questions about how is it possible that they are not seeing pressure on US consumers in casual dining? How are they bucking the trend? How can this possibly continue? So long story short, some businesses, it's a China issue. Some it's a tariff issue, but for all of them, it either is or is going to become, I think, a US consumer issue, and the tariffs are going to impact that.
Indeed, Ghost. I mean, you've looked at some interesting names there. So, I mean, just on a year-to-date basis, Lululemon, that's down 23%. Nike down 14%. So maybe that's why Lululemon, you know, very concerned about tariffs, I think, relative to a Nike. But let's look at what's up on a year-to-date basis, because that's even more interesting. Going back to that differentiation around consumer staples versus consumer discretionary purchases. I mean, at the top of this list, and I've got a long list here, right? BJ's, that's come through. And followers of Magic Markets Premium will know that we've included this in the competitor section. When we look at stocks like Walmart or when we look at Costco, BJ's up almost 30% on a year-to-date basis. If we look at something else, if we look at Dollar General, you know, that falling in, I would say, the lower LSM part of the market, yes, off a very low base. Dollar General had performed very, very poorly over the last 12 months. But that's done okay on a year-to-date basis, up 15%. So you can see that defensive theme coming through. Even Kroger, which is more of a supermarket or grocery retailer, so less discretionary, more consumer staples, they're up around 10%. And when you compare that to even the stronger players like a Walmart, I've really liked Walmart. Walmart down around 3.5% for this year. Costco up around 3.5%. So those very big box, you know, we cover some staples and some discretionary, those players pretty much treading water. But then when you look at the really discretionary stuff, Lululemon's, Nike's, and in fact, even if you go further down, Deckers, I indicated, down 45% on a year-to-date basis. You can obviously extend that a little bit longer. You can say over the last 12 months, there you'll see a player like Walmart comes through very strongly. 43, almost 44% up there. And that's because, again, they've been gaining some ground against some of the other players. I'm not going to give away a lot of what we do in Magic Markets Premium. The point I want to land on here, Ghost, is that that differentiation between consumer discretionary and consumer staples is very strong. And even if you break it out to beyond sectors that just look at the consumer, you've got to look at utilities. Utilities have actually done okay over the last quarter. In fact, that's been a story over the last two quarters. I was calling it from around the middle of last year, probably a little bit early. Then we went, it was doing really well into the election cycle in the US. Trump then won. You saw some of that come through. You know, the markets actually rallied directly after the election. But subsequent to that, even utilities have been a decent play. So pay attention, because these macro stories do make a difference in terms of sector allocation. I know a lot of people don't go as granular. Even if you're taking ETF exposure in the US, you can get direct ETF exposure to specific sectors. If you are active in an asset allocation space, that might make sense. If you are a stock picker, just be sensitive that even if you're buying a big company like a Walmart, you're getting a very different mix underlying that. And the international investment universe is really, really wide. So it does present some very compelling opportunities to get involved. These things are cyclical. If you look at those same numbers I mentioned to you, but over a five-year time period, you get a very, very different picture coming through. And that's because we went through that cycle of consumer exceptionalism, lots of optimism, free money following COVID. And now that steam is starting to come out of the market. So you've got to be a lot more selective in terms of the types of exposures you're getting, Ghost.
Yeah, so let me ask you outright, Mo, are you buying any of these consumer pressure stories at the moment, or are you waiting it out? Because I've got to say, I am sitting on the sidelines at the moment. I'm not adding exposure here.
Yeah, I'm sitting it out because that economic uncertainty index that I mentioned up front, that's very high. So it looks as though something may well break. And the fact of the matter is, unless the Trump administration backtracks on some of this tariff war stuff that's going on, there is going to be pain to be felt. And why do you want to go and get exposure to high beta consumer stocks in that kind of environment? My preference, where I have really been directly allocating capital over the last two quarters and continue to do so, have been in some of the defensive names, like I say, utilities. And there I'm investing for income. So a lot of those pay reasonable, steady dividends. So even if you get some choppiness around the share price, you've got a nice solid dividend underpin that seems to come through. Another play there is we've discussed the regional bifurcation that's occurring. I've taken some European exposure that's worked out relatively well. I've been taking a lot more Canadian exposure versus the US. So it's a geographical realignment as well as a sectoral realignment for me, Ghost.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to track over the year, obviously. And that's what we'll certainly do on this podcast each week. To our listeners, if you want to get the more detailed stuff, then please do check out Magic Markets Premium. We recorded a show on Alibaba a short while ago. So that's part of our theme of looking beyond the US and showing you what else is out there in the world. We did BMW last week, which was super interesting. The issue at BMW obviously is Chinese disruption and their issues in China specifically. And at Alibaba, we go to the source of it, admittedly not in the automotive sector, but just looking at what does the growth look like on that side of the world? And certainly won't give any spoilers away there, but some pretty interesting charts, quite a fun valuation story versus Tencent. Lots to sink your teeth into. And yeah, I think that's probably a good place to leave it, Mo, for our listeners to go and enjoy what we've done in Premium this week.
Indeed, Ghost. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Hit us up on social media. It's at Magic Markets Pod, one word, at Finance Ghost and at Mohammed Nalla, all on X. Go and find us on LinkedIn. Pop us a note on there. If you're not a Magic Markets Premium subscriber, it's only 99 Rand a month. Really suggest you go and check that out if you are interested in the underlying stories and some pretty much some great opportunities. Not everything's a buy, not everything's a sell, but it does give you a deep insight in what's happening under the hood. That's we've got to leave it. Until next week, same time, same place. Thanks and cheers.
Ciao. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not financial or investment advice. Please speak to your personal financial advisor.